It is Middays with Mannix and Mannix, and we're inside of 90 minutes from the kickoff of FIFA World Cup 2026. The U.S. kicks it off tomorrow in Los Angeles. Well, we talk a lot of Major League Soccer with Brad Feldman, but he knows an awful lot, too, because there are a few Revs connections with this World Cup. So, Brad Feldman, New England Revolution broadcast voice, even though the MLS is off, he's back to talk some World Cup with us. Brad, thanks for taking some time to do it, my man. How are you?
I'm good. Good, yeah, no, it's an exciting time. Happy to be on with you to talk about the big tournament, yeah.
Yes, indeed, and that long wait here since the tournament was awarded is finally over. We get our first match here in a little less than 90 minutes in Mexico City. But, of course, there's some big Revs connections with this World Cup coming up here, Brad. The big one everybody knows, of course, Matt Turner, the current goalkeeper with Team USA, but a couple other ones who will actually play each other tomorrow in Toronto, which is kind of cool. Tejan Buchanan of Canada and Esmir Bayraktarevic of Bosnia and Herzegovina going against each other tomorrow. So how neat is it, number one, that we're finally here, but how excited are you to see these guys with Revs connections on the pitch and doing their thing?
Yeah, it's been when you get to be my age, you know, 6-8 years goes by in the blink of an eye. I think a lot of us were surprised the U.S. didn't get awarded the 2018 or 2022 bid. 2018, I think, was supposed to go to Western Europe, and, you know, that's sort of in the rearview mirror. But, you know, to get 26 as co-host is great. It's been over 30 years since the last time I was here. I remember that. Seems like a very different era and very different time all of a sudden. And it really, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out, because a lot of us were thinking this is really a golden generation of U.S. players. And while the talent and the overall feel for the game has continued to improve, you know, the rest of the world improves too, and we still haven't, unless somebody emerges and breaks out in the next 3-4 weeks, we still haven't produced a Messi, a Ronaldo type of a guy yet. Most countries haven't, but that's been, you know, the U.S. is consistently in the top 20 in the FIFA rankings, and we are a strong soccer nation, but, you know, we want that tipping point, and it hasn't happened yet. Maybe we'll see something surprising, and I hope we do. I still think it's going to be a very positive few weeks for the sport, despite all the other stuff going on around the soccer. I think the soccer is going to be great. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and Jeff and I were having this discussion to open our show today at the 10 o'clock hour when we first came on air, just how exciting it's going to be to watch Canada, Mexico, USA all have these hosting and wondering how much it could play into runs potentially for all three. What are your expectations, Brad, of Mexico, Canada, and United States? And we'll start with Mexico and Canada, because last week we talked a lot with you about the United States men's national team. So maybe give us a little idea of what you expect from Mexico and Canada as well, who are going to have this host advantage.
Yeah, so I'm predicting the U.S. to win their group. I think Turkey is right there with them in turn, depending on which model you look at. And I think, you know, the U.S. probably has an easier pathway afterwards if they get the first seed. You never know, though, because in some of the other groups, you know, like teams may downshift. You just don't know. I think that Canada, especially if they get Alphonso Davies back from the hamstring injury, I think that they, you know, should move. You know, they're projected to finish second behind Switzerland, who are very strong. So I would say USA first in their group, Group D. Canada, you know, they also have Bombito, questionable, Flores out with an ACL, but they're still very good. Mexico, they have to deal with that weight of expectations, and we don't really know how good they are because, like Canada and the USA, they didn't have to play qualifiers. But, you know, I think they're going to have a massive home field advantage. And they have Irving Lozano and Santiago Jimenez in the attack. They're projected nearly 95% to reach the knockout phase. And so, you know, it pick them because Czechia is also very good, although very sort of direct and blunt instrument type of a Czech team, not as technical as we've seen in the past. But all three should advance the round of 32. And then beyond that, you know, you're asking me the USA, like they could, I think they advanced the round of 16. Anything beyond that is I think, sort of their ceiling, like the final eight quarterfinals would be a massive achievement for the U.S., although I know Americans don't think that way. I think that that's a realistic sort, but you know, ambitious goal for the United States.
And I think that's a good goal, certainly, because that is still two knockout stage victories, which the United States hasn't been able to produce here in my lifetime anyway. So a quarterfinal
For me, I think one of the things that doesn't get talked about enough is that in 2002 under Bruce Arena with a young Landon Donovan, a lot of people didn't see it because it was, you know, the Japan-South Korea World Cup. So these games were at 3 a.m., 5 a.m., 7 a.m. I remember waking up for breakfast, and they were a missed handball in the goal mouth penalty call away from probably beating Germany and advancing to – you know, to the semifinals.
Yeah.
Think about that. You know, Germany was in full flush. You know, they did a reset, that reboot after Euro 2004. But, you know, Germany were a powerhouse, and the U.S. were standing toe-to-toe with them in the last eight of the tournament. So, to me, like, that bar was kind of set there. Mm-hmm. It's a very different era now. It is all of a sudden a long time ago, and it makes me feel old to be even having these conversations. But it's not like it didn't happen. You know what I mean? Like, that did happen. And a lot of those players are on TV now reminding younger fans that it happened. But it happened in the wee hours of the morning a long time ago. So, you know, I think that U.S. soccer is, in terms of the overall number of really good players that we produce, much, much better. But, you know, you can make the case that the system, you know, and it's another conversation for another day, a bit anodyne. The academies are very good. But we need a little more sort of that street sauce in our soccer and to identify the guys who have that creative flair. You know, guys like Gio Reyna and Christian Pulisic have a little bit of that and Balogun up top. But, you know, Weston McKennie, but we don't have enough of them. You know, more good athletes with that magic in their feet and the odds of producing a creative superstar increased. But in the meantime, U.S. are a good team.
Yeah, certainly looking forward to that opener tomorrow night here to see how they do against Paraguay. And I do want to turn it back a little bit to the guys we touched on a little bit earlier on here. Matt Turner with Team USA, Tejan Buchanan with Canada, and Esmir Bayraktarević here with Bosnia and Herzegovina. How big of a role do you expect those guys to have on their respective teams? Turner, we know, might be the starter, starting goalkeeper. Buchanan will probably have a big role, and Esmir has certainly gotten a lot of time with Bosnia here as well. How do you think this tournament will go for those three, and how do you expect them to be utilized?
I think it's quite possible that Turner will have the smallest role of the three of them. I hope I'm wrong, but you know, the fact that Fries got 90 minutes against Germany, and he didn't have any howlers, but he wasn't great on either of the two Germany goals in terms of positioning. And Turner was really good against Senegal, but he let in that one, which wasn't on him. But, you know, if it's not Sadio Mane, things go a little differently, gets his hand on it, then we might be having a different conversation. I think we'll know soon. Fries gets at least the Paraguay game to prove that he's not worthy of the start. Going forward, although Matt, based on current form, and we talked about this already, in my book, and you've heard from a lot of pundits in the last 2 weeks, a lot of people agree with me that Matt Turner is playing as well as he's played in his you know, stellar story career. The eye test as well as the modern metrics all say that he is keeping the ball out of the net in a much more regular and efficient way than Fries, who's a good goalkeeper, but not capable of the same sort of just jaguar quick saves. And you know, also, like, Matt plays the position overall, I think, better. Commands his box better on high balls. You know, his distribution is certainly improved over distance. Great with distribution, and is playing with his, feet short, every once in a while makes a mistake, but it's not, really a concern. He's still poised back there, and his starting positions are so good, and combine that with his long frame and quick, his quick reaction time, and the fact that he's leading the league in goals prevented. He should be getting it. Now, getting back to the question, like Tayshaun Buchanan, one of Canada's certainly most dangerous transition attackers. When he first went to Europe, they were deploying him more as an outside back, but playing as a winger, like he just has the power and the speed to just run by people with the ball. With Davey still nursing a hamstring and probably going to miss the opener. Had they ruled him out formally? I don't think so, but he's more likely to appear later in the group stage. So they're really going to need him. Tayshaun, that is. They also have Ali Ahmed. But the way they play is to press and press, Jesse Marsh out of that Red Bull system, and then hit on the break. They have Jonathan David as well, is really good. But I think that you're going to see, Tayshaun, who featured for them in 2022 and had an assist in the tournament. Like, I think you're going to see a lot of Tayshaun Buchanan, who's been playing in the Champions League for Villarreal over in, he's in Spain in La Liga, and I think he had 7 Champions League appearances this year. So he's ready for the World Cup. He was last time around. And Esmir, who's, younger, is like, he's, so Tayshaun's 27. Esmir now 21. That makes me feel old. I remember he was just breaking in. Revolution Academy product from Wisconsin, right? His parents came out of war-torn Bosnia, and he's always had a lot of national pride. He played in the U.S. youth system. Turned out once for the senior team, but you're allowed to switch once, as you know. So Esmir, has pledged his loyalty to Bosnia. He hit the winning penalty against Italy to qualify Bosnia and Herzegovina. And, he didn't go to his teammates. He went to the fan section and, was pointing to the national crest. And, with what some of those people have been through, and it's, it's their first World Cup in over a decade, and he's, he's primed and ready. They play a 4-4-2, and he is a great, take-on dribbler, really creative, not as powerful as Tayshaun, not as linear, but so crafty, so technical, can skin defenders and outside midfielders alive. And whether he starts or comes off the bench, he's going to be very involved. And, I think the Reds are rightfully proud of all three in – all three cases, these guys were not the most touted players coming in. It was great work by the Reds technical staff to identify Esmir in Wisconsin, get him into the residential academy, have him play with the youth teams in Revs 2. They broke him in at a very good, sort of progressive rate. They didn't just throw him in the deep end. He started playing in, like, U.S. Open Cup games for the first team. And it was hard to part with him, but, they got a good fee. He goes to PSV Eindhoven and Holland. Tayshaun, again, not a linear path from the Toronto area. Canada went and played, high-level youth soccer in Colorado. That got him spotted by Syracuse. Very strong D1 program, but, it's not Duke, Indiana, UCLA, right? Syracuse has been better the last year. They also produced another World Cup guy, Miles Robinson, from the Boston area. But not necessarily, the guy who, was, top three pick in the MLS draft. Rev staff identified him. It became clear that he was a pro right out of the gate, but still had some developing to do. Big part of the Rev's playoff runs in 2020-2021. Transferred over to Belgium, Club Brugge, played in the Champions League there, then went to Inter Milan, now Villarreal. Like, these are guys that the Revs are very proud of. And Turner, we talked about it. The guy was, third stringer out of Fairfield. Again, mid-major program. Took up soccer late, but had elite quickness and great instinct for saves. And he worked with Kevin Hitchcock, the Reds goalkeeping coach, after he got to the Reds in 2019 and, helped. And Matt did all the work, right? And then he bet on himself to go to Arsenal, and Nottingham Forest didn't go great for him there, like, let's be honest. But he's come back since the, last third of the 2025 season and just played lights out between the sticks for the Reds. And, I hear some talk about the Reds having brought in big superstars. What's Carlos Hill? Carlos Hill, maybe not a household name, but he played in La Liga and the Premier League, MVP in this league, best 11 player in this league. They bring back Matt Turner from the Premier League. And the Reds right now, a third of the way through, a little more than a third of the way through the season at the World Cup break, really good. But you look at that lineage, that heritage. And the last thing I'll say is it's really exciting that these guys, these Revs and former Revs, are in the World Cup. But it's not new. We've seen it before, right? The Revolution were founded with two U.S. national team guys in Mike Burns and Alexi Lalas. Joe Max Moore, a big part of the U.S. national team late 90s, early 2000s. He had, run over with Everton in between his two stints with the Revolution. Obviously, Clint Dempsey has made a docuseries about his life. And, it was really fun to see his highlights, coming into the Reds, unheralded player that Steve Nichol and his staff identified and took a bet on, and he transferred over to play, play Fulham and Tottenham over in the Premier League before coming back, but scoring a goal in the 06 World Cup. I remember walking through Boston to Mayor Tom and Nino's offices and everybody recognizing him. Reds got Jermaine Jones. He was part of the World Cup. He came to the Reds right afterwards. So it's not the first time we've seen it, but I'm glad we're talking about it because, I think it maybe makes some of these games more relatable for New England soccer fans. And if not, look it up, do a quick search, however you get your information, or just watch the game and know that there's a connection to your regional first division pro team, the Reds, and that this isn't just some far-fetched thing that happens in other parts of the world. There are direct connections to New England soccer. So I'm glad we're talking about it. It is a fun time.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And last one here real quick while we've got time with you. Obviously, I'm sure a lot of folks in the listening audience have probably gone to Gillette for a Revs game. I'm sure it's going to be a little different, though, for a World Cup. What sorts of maybe differences should folks expect?
Well, you should certainly plan ahead for the traffic and stuff. We've seen it with the big friendlies. I'm going to a couple games, and I was on Google Maps last night sort of strategizing my entrance. The exit, I think, is pretty straightforward. But, I saw one site saying add an extra 4 hours. And it's not because of poor planning or just because of the bigger crowd size. It's also lack of familiarity. Like, we've seen that with a Brazil match versus a Patriots game, where it's just people who aren't used to coming to Foxborough for a match. Maybe it's a little slower and whatever. I think the atmosphere, I've been down to the stadium a couple times now since they sort of wrapped it in. It's called Boston Stadium, right?
Right.
For FIFA and their conflicting sponsors and all that. I don't care about that. But, it looks cool. I think it's going to be an electric atmosphere, even for the maybe, because obviously France, Norway, England, Ghana, those are big time games. But I'm going to Iraq, Norway. I think that will be tremendous. I think Haiti, Scotland will be that's the first game down at Foxborough in a couple days. And I think that will be, with those two fan bases, just a lot of fun, no matter how it shakes out on the pitch. Scotland fans are already in and around Boston making a lot of noise, as they always do. Tartan Army, tremendous traveling fan base for Scotland. And then Haiti, they're Haitians in and around Boston, up and down the northeast coast, and they're going to represent well. Also, so I think no matter what game you go to, it's going to be sizzling atmosphere, tremendous national pride. And then you get to the knockout phase games, the sixth and seventh games in Foxborough are going to be really high stakes. We'll see how they shake out. Some big teams, depending on how the groups stack up, could be in Foxborough. So there's a lot to look forward to.
Brad Feldman is the New England Revolution broadcast voice. Thanks for coming on to talk World Cup with us. We'll be calling on you throughout the tournament, no doubt.
Good stuff, guys. Thank you.
You got it. Again, Brad Feldman, New England Revolution broadcast voice. We finish it strong with Mannix versus Mannix, brought to you by Caesars Sportsbook. Next.